This is Suit Up Sports. Where opinions are as sharp as a tailored suit. No fluff, no gimmicks, just unfiltered, hard-hitting takes on sports and a whole lot more. It's time to suit up. Now here's your host, DJ The Suit Stout.
Welcome to Suit Up Sports. I'm DJ The Suit Stout, along with 10-year NFL veteran Frank Garcia. And we can announce the 2025 National College Football Champion, Ohio State Buckeyes. Game kind of went the way we thought it would. Unfortunately, if you're a Notre Dame fan like myself, you knew if you weren't able to run the ball, number one, you were going to be in trouble. Number two, you also knew that Ohio State has talent everywhere on both sides of the ball, and they just put on a damn exhibition. I mean, it was unbelievable.
Well, I don't think they punted until late in the game. I think where there was a first turnover is really the only time that they had a misstep on offense. And, Notre Dame came out strong. They had the first drive. They methodically went down the field. And, you know, I'm sitting there kind of with a little bit of a chubby as I'm watching the offensive line control that game.
Yep.
With physicality and dominating the line of scrimmage, pushing Ohio State around. And then it just felt like, you know, Ohio State came back and answered. They have too many weapons. Their quarterback, I think, was 14 of 14. They had a great game plan against Notre Dame. They executed at a high level. And there's really, you know, nothing you can say negative about Ohio State. And, you know, that's the reason why we're sitting here at 2025 looking at them and crowning them the national champs. And I think it's the first time in history of the AP that they're unanimous.
Yeah.
Unanimous national champs. It's the first time. It's a historic day for Ohio State, or historic day for the Big 12. And, congratulations to Buckeyes, the Buckeye fans.
Yeah. I mean, listen, before the playoffs started, I felt that Ohio State, even during the season, I felt that, I bet them during the season to win the whole thing. I just felt they had the most talent, but they weren't playing like it necessarily. And then when they get whipped by Michigan, everyone thinks the sky's falling and whatever. And we talked about this on a couple podcasts ago where, you know, it's abnormal where both teams in the national championship can really look back at a loss and say that might have been where things turned. And with Notre Dame, when they lost to Northern Illinois, second game of the season at home, horrible loss. It kind of turned the way that they turned their focus. And I think Marcus Freeman really became a head coach after that game. He really kind of took the reins in and said, you know what, we're going to do this my way, and I'm not going to let the pressure from outside come in. We're going to bring this in-house. And he did. And Ryan Day, after losing to Michigan, especially, and you and I were talking about this before the show, where, you know, he's not beat Michigan. And when you're an Ohio State fan or a Michigan fan, losing that game is almost the death penalty. And and to lose it four times in a row, if I'm not mistaken.
And that's Jim Tressel. I mean, Tressel had an incredible record, but couldn't beat Michigan.
Well, I think his last two he lost, if I'm not mistaken. I want to say that he had
he had a great record against Michigan. It was Harbaugh there for a while that couldn't do it, and then all of a sudden
he
went nuts and won the national championship.
Exactly.
And I mean, that's a great question to, you know, pose out there. I mean, if you're one of those two fan bases, it's really kind of, you know, sadly, I mean, maybe you have the Alabama, Auburn, but that even seemed to lost its little bit of a luster with rivalries.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that seems to really still be kind of the only rivalry left in college football, is that Ohio State Michigan. Now, if you're a rival, if you're Clemson, South Carolina, if you're Washington State, Washington, if you're USC, UCLA, you might disagree with that. But from a national standpoint, that really kind of, for the last couple of years, has determined who's going to be playing in the championship and or for the championship.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, when you have a rivalry, it's one thing to North Carolina and Duke is a great rivalry in basketball. And the reason is usually one of those teams are going to go to the Final Four, if not the championship. Michigan, Ohio State, same thing. Auburn, Alabama, not necessarily as of late. Clemson, South Carolina, not necessarily as of late.
You're in those fan bases.
Right, exactly. But as far as
a national standpoint, it's just a different story.
It is. And for all the SEC fans and other fans, minus the Big 12, to have back-to-back national championships with Michigan and Ohio State, that's a conference that we like to kind of make fun of and you can't anymore. Penn State was right there as well. And you look at the top 10 for next year going into the season, you got Ohio State 1, Penn State 2, and Michigan rounds out in the top 20. But
Ohio State was always knocking on the door, but they seemed to be the SEC's redheaded stepchild, right?
Yep.
When they played Alabama, Nick Saban dominated the conference, or LSU when he was there, or, you know, when LSU was on top, or, you know, Georgia. Ohio State was kind of the second best team, you know, not this year and not last year. That conference has really stepped up, and they faced the demon, the monster, in the SEC last year and, you know, knocked them out. You know, Michigan beating Georgia, or they actually beat Washington, but they beat Georgia in the semis, you know, to get there. And then, you know, this year, you know, there wasn't an SEC team in the Final Four. No, Texas was an SEC team.
Yep.
That's right. I forgot they moved, but
still
Texas is still, you know, that one team that was kind of holding the flag for the conference. And, you know, they got knocked out last week. So
the portal has just changed it all, because now these teams with high bankrolls, and look at all these teams in the
Ohio State
10.
Had one of the top in the country.
Yeah, if I'm mistaken, they were the top with 20 million. But you know, all those teams have a lot of money being spent on the portal, and you know, we were talking about this again earlier before the show. You know, if you're a guy that goes to a school like that and you don't get the playing time you want, you're out of there. And so the rosters that we just saw at both of these schools are going to look different next year, but they're not going to look different from a bad way, because the guys they lose, they're just going to replace with better people from the portal. And I think Notre Dame will be interesting to see what they do at quarterback. They've jumped to the portal the last 2 years with Sam Hartman and then Riley Leonard. They've got some really good quarterbacks on the roster now.
This was Riley Leonard's last hurrah. I mean, he was a fifth-year senior.
Yep.
You know, this is, you know, after coming back from Duke. And you bring up a great point, you know, DJ, you know, between the difference in the makeup of programs. It'll be, because typically what we've seen in years past, you know, with Georgia's, with SEC talent, with, you know, Clemson's, with the perennial powerhouse teams, is the depth that they've had, right? And, you know, building a program, you have to have that sophomore, you know, when that senior graduates, to come up and, you know, kind of take the reins and be that next guy that's going to make that jump to the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the offensive defensive line, it'll be interesting to see, you know, with the portal and the NIL money and how that gets handled. But the quarterback position, who I feel like is the most, you know, most vital, crucial position in all sports, especially college football. If you have a great quarterback, you have an opportunity to beat any team out there that you play. And if you get hot, and you know, what's going to happen with these perennial powerhouse programs when they bring in those hired assassins to take over, with that guy that is eventually going to be the guy, but he goes and plays. And it's going to turn into college basketball. You're going to have the one and dones for these programs at that position. And you're really, you know, kind of say, who's the top quarterback? Let's go get him. If you're Ohio State, let's go pay him. And it's become the NFL free agency without any rules.
Well, and both these teams had that. You know, Will Howard came from Kansas State, and McCord, Ohio State's quarterback last year, went to Syracuse and had a really good year. Notre Dame, Sam Hartman, they got from Wake Forest, and he's in the NFL now. And then they brought Riley Leonard in.
Not necessarily the best guy, but they were the best for the program.
Well, they're
the most experienced. Yeah, that's right.
They've been in the league for 4 or 5 years, so they know what they're doing. You're not having to groom a freshman.
They have a lot of starts.
Exactly.
A lot of playing time under their belt.
And then, you know, listen, when you're Ohio State, and all, again, all these schools that we talked about are going to have this, but Ohio State just had it to the umpteenth. When you're looking at Jeremiah Smith, when you're lucky to have a lot of these veterans and a lot of these upperclassmen, and then you throw in a true freshman like him, who's the best player on the field, arguably, and just a man among boys. And listen, in the last two games, you know, Jeremiah Smith against Texas, they held him, I believe, to one catch last night.
But it's not just the catches that he has impact with, DJ.
Well, no, that's what I was going to say, is that having him on there and not being selfish to where he's only going to have one catch, but realizing he's opening the field up for his other
receivers. The impact that he has, exactly right.
And then last night, at the end of the game, when they called his number, when Notre Dame decided to bring pressure on 3rd and 11, they're, you know, 8 points down.
Mistake.
And it was, I know you thought that they shouldn't have done that, and you know, he broke free and perfect pass.
Well,
by Howard.
He was one on one. The cornerback had no chance.
Yeah.
You know, against a bigger, faster, stronger athlete, they put him on an island. He had terrible technique. He didn't jam the receiver. He just opened up and bailed and gave him a soft corner, and he just ran by him.
Yeah.
And you know, Will Howard threw a dime.
He did.
When it counted, he threw a dime, and Jeremiah Smith went up and caught it. And it was, you know, basically like playing pitch and catch to you and your son out in the backyard. That's how open he was. You go deep, let me throw you a ball, and you run underneath it and catch it. And, you know, that was the nail in the coffin for any chance that Notre Dame wanted to have to come back and win that game. Because I will give, you know, we're going to sit here and talk a lot about Ohio State, and deservingly so. But Marcus Freeman and the Notre Dame Fighting Irish last night, there's nothing to be ashamed of. You played a really, really, really talented team. And they were just more talented than you. They had one or two more guys that were difference makers, impact players. But for Notre Dame to hang in that game, being down 21-7 at halftime, going out, I think it got to 28, if I'm not mistaken, because they came out in the next drive and they went up three scores.
Yeah.
And it looked like it was going to be a rout. And Marcus Freeman, as he's done in the past, is no quit. And, you know, this team fought back. They had a turnover. They had a stop. They had a big play. And, you know, they didn't quit. Riley Leonard did a great job of competing. There's no shame to him. Marcus Freeman did a great job, you know, with what he was able to do. You know, the fake punt was open. You know, another opportunity to kind of, you know, maybe, you know, make some get some momentum.
That pass kind of reminded me of, and we'll talk about this later, but of the Mark Andrews pass in Baltimore. Like,
same type of play.
He was open, he threw it low. The receiver should have had it. Now this, the pass from Lamar to Andrews, again, we'll talk about that later, was I think a better throw than this one, but still the receiver could have had it.
My question to you and everybody else is, fourth and two, everybody on the planet is aware of what?
That Notre Dame likes the trick plays.
Fake punt.
Yeah.
Why, if you're going to run a fake punt, why not just do it with the guy that you design a play for to run the same play and have the same chance, but it's the guy that's been out there doing it.
Keep your offense.
Yeah, keep your offense in the game. Just go for it, right? Run the fullback out in the flat. It's a flood route. It's a load pass. You know, you got three options. If not there, you run with the quarterback and try to get something. But, you know, it was the case where you maybe got a little bit, you outcoached yourself, right? You outcoached yourself and instead of just going out there and, you know, doing the little fundamental things and what wins games. And, you know, again, I mean, that's not the difference in winning or losing the game. Ohio State was the better team throughout the game. I think they only punted one time, maybe twice. You know, when Howard's going 14 of 14, 17 of 21, 231 yards, two touchdowns, zero interceptions, that's going to be tough to beat Ohio State.
Yeah, and then, you know, talking about transfers again, you know, Judkins comes in from Ole Miss, running back, and he had a hell of a game last night. And I mean, Ohio State was just loaded, and Notre Dame would go to man defense, and then Ohio State would call a play against it. They'd blitz, and then they'd go to the one-on-one match.
Well, Howard would run.
Yeah, and he that's the thing. He can run the ball a lot better than he gets credit for, and he did. I mean, Riley Leonard, that first drive, ran right down the field, and you know, you're thinking, good God, this guy's exhausted already. He's getting the hell knocked out of him every drive, but he scores a touchdown. And then Will Howard goes, you know, I can do that too. And he came down, and not only that, he threw the ball on a dime. Like you said, I think he started 14 or 14. And look, congratulations, Ohio State. They had a hell of a season. They're talented. Ryan Day finally gets that off his back. And now, you know, he probably afforded himself a couple more Michigan losses if that's what it takes to keep his job. And, you know, there was a lot of rumors of even him going to the NFL. Which, you know, this long playoff run definitely kept him off the interview cycle for this year. But he can coach, and anyone that knows football knows that he can coach. And,
well, it's easy to coach when you have the best players.
Well, that's right? True.
I mean,
but he also has to give him credit.
Absolutely.
He also brought in some great coordinators. I mean, look, Chip Kelly coming in, offensive coordinator, he called a great game last night. And a lot of people forget that Chip Kelly left as a head coach at UCLA to come and just be the offensive coordinator at Ohio State because he didn't want to mess with this portal crap. He just wanted to call an offense, and he called a great game last night. I mean, it literally, no matter what Notre Dame did, it seemed like he had the play called to beat it. And
they're a step ahead. They were playing chess. Notre Dame seemed to be playing checkers, you know, there for the majority of the game until Notre Dame got the momentum a little bit and closed it to within one score. They missed the field goal.
Yeah.
I don't know what's up with the doinks.
These games, a lot of doinks this year. They ought to come up with a, like, if you doink it, you at least get a point and a half or something. Let's throw something into the FanDuel or something.
It's funny, you know, in practice, a lot of the players, that the kickers or the quarterbacks, they'll try to hit those crossbars.
Yeah.
But I don't know what it is during the game. It just sounds like there's like, I don't know if they put a microphone on the crossbars
or not.
They
do, but it's almost like, because it really seems like we've noticed it more this year. And I'm sure that and they've hit them all the time over the course of football. But this year, it seems like they've just hooked up a damn blah punk sound system up to it because it's in stereo.
Let's go back to that moment in time last night in that game when you look at that play. I mean, everybody's questioning whether you kick the field goal or not.
Yep.
Right? You're down two scores. You're down 16 points. What is a field goal going to get you here? Well, it turned out it really didn't matter, obviously, but they would have, after they go down and score two more times, they get the conversion on the first one for 8. They'd only be down 5 points.
5 or 6. They would have been
down 5 points.
A touchdown
would have beat Ohio State.
Yep.
So the pressure of that alone puts a lot more on a play caller and making mistakes versus I'm still up 8. I can take this shot deep down the field. If I don't get it, that's okay. We can punt. We're still up 8.
Yeah.
I don't know if that same call is made. It probably is, knowing Chip Kelly. But if you're only down 5, are you throwing the ball? Because if you don't make it, now you're punting it back to them and giving them a chance and opportunity with all the momentum in the game to go down and beat you, right? Yep. Are you going to run the ball, eat the clock up, and play defense? Or are you going to go down? Those little points and those little things, you know, change the momentum in the course of a game that we really don't kind of see how that, but that was a big miss.
Huge miss. And Jeter, transfer again on the portal from South Carolina, one of the best kickers in the league last year, struggled for the most part this year, but he's gotten it together during the playoffs. He I don't think he's missed a kick until that one. I mean, like you said, at the time, and even this morning reading a lot of the publications, Marcus Freeman got that question quite a bit. Why didn't you go for it there? And his, he's got the guy with him with the index card telling him, no, you're supposed to go for it here. And he just felt that the way that Ohio State's
defense we needed playing, points. It was fourth and goal from a, they started off within like the 10-yard line. I think they had a sack or a penalty, whatever that might have been, to knock them back to like fourth and goal from like the 14-yard line, right? It's a chip shot field goal, and the chance of taking points and continuing to keep momentum versus getting a fourth and 14 with Ohio State being really, really stringent on defense, yeah, probably one of the most in the country inside the red zone, not at giving up touchdowns. It wasn't likely that they were going to, that they were going to score from fourth and 14. So you kick the field goal, you keep the momentum. You're only down 11 now, or you'd be down 13 now. And you keep it within grasp, and you're still climbing, right? I thought it was the right decision.
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with
it. I thought it was the right decision.
Like you said, if he makes the field goal, it would have looked as if it paid off because they would have had a touchdown away from taking the lead.
And he covers my bet.
Well, that's the real reason you were bothered by it. But great game. And I was, as a Notre Dame fan, again, happy that they hung in there. They're tough. They're scrappy. They've done that all year long. But, man, Ohio State is good. And
well, what's the future of Notre Dame look like, DJ? Because we sit here and talk about some of these other teams. And I think that's one of the things I really like about Marcus Freeman. I know they're going to have guys like Riley Leonard coming from Duke and, other players that are going to be transferring. But it seems to me, I mean, I really respect Marcus Freeman. I would like to, as a player, play for that guy because he's calm, he's cool, but you can feel the fire burning within, and players want to play for that guy.
Yep.
Right? And he's building a program. And it feels like Notre Dame is building a program where Ohio State's hiring assassins. It may not be fair to Ohio State, may not be fair to Oregon and some of these other programs, but they're going out there and buying the best team where it feels like next year Notre Dame with the right players, right quarterback in position is building an organization. They're building a team within.
I mean, I said it this way yesterday. I think Notre Dame arrived to this point a little earlier than people thought they would have arrived. Freeman not ever being a head coach before, taking over when Brian Kelly left LSU, and Brian Kelly tried to bring him with him to LSU, and obviously Freeman stayed and got the head coaching job. But I think Notre Dame's on the right path. I think they got to this spot a little earlier than everyone expected. I think that this whole run has been great for Notre Dame because a lot of the interviews that Freeman has had after games or before games, you really got to see, kind of look behind the window and see that this guy's a great guy. And as a parent, you would definitely want your kid playing for him. And most importantly, kids, like you said, competitors would want to play for him. So I think Notre Dame's on the right track. And listen,
and you can tell, DJ, the way you can tell you know, having been on teams on both sides, right, where I knew that we had something special brewing. Mm. And that's kind of what I'm talking about with Notre Dame. Mm. You know, they have a formula brewing that isn't quite ready yet. And it's you got a taste of it, right? Yeah. They got a taste of what success looks like. And some of those younger players in the program that they're building, you know, they have as much recruiting power and money as anybody out there. If they wanted to go build and buy a team, they could. But I think that
They had some important transfers this year.
Absolutely.
I mean, Riley Leonard, they had Clark at DB. I mean, they did have some important guys that they got through.
But they have a left tackle right now that went out there and played his first game.
That kid's a redshirt freshman.
He's a redshirt freshman, and he played against arguably, I mean, the kid from Ohio State.
Well, their whole defensive line in general is
He was a five-star guy, yeah, and the number one player in high school coming out 3 years ago. So he's put in the time, yeah, with Ohio State. As a freshman, he got a lot of playing time. He's probably going to be a top first, second-round guy pick.
No doubt.
But that left tackle for Notre Dame, that's what builds championships. You know, those key positions, left tackle, defensive end, quarterback, wide receivers, and cornerbacks, right? Mm-hmm. Your impact players. And then you sprinkle in the toughness and the speed and the athleticism with your linebackers and your defensive line, D tackles. Mm-hmm. And Notre Dame was missing two D tackles. I think they're going to see the NFL.
They will, yeah.
But, you know, who's the next group coming up? I think there's a lot of bright spots and bright days ahead for Notre Dame. And I think Marcus Freeman, you know, deserves a lot of credit for the season he put together. And, you know, even in this game, there's a lot of teams that would have went out there and folded up shop down 28-7, down 21-7. It didn't seem like they could stop them. And this team just kept plugging away. So I give a lot of credit to Notre Dame.
Even when Notre Dame really needed to stop and they got it and our defensive end hit the quarterback late for a 15-yard penalty, that was the drive that we still ended up getting the turnover. So it ended up not hurting us. So they don't quit, and you're right. But Ohio State doesn't either. Listen, when Notre Dame went down the field, the very first drive, long drive, manhandling their defensive line, Riley Leonard running the ball like he's freaking, you know,
Ohio State got a little conservative towards the end of the game. Rightfully so. You're up 16 points. You know, let's chew the clock up. Let's get this game, the clock running.
Yep.
And, you know,
at the end, but I'm saying even at the beginning, like when Notre Dame went right down the field, Ohio State had adversity right away. Mm-hmm. And all they did was come out and not punt for about two hours.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, they came right out and said, all right, we're all right. Let's just do this. Let's do this. Let's do this.
Well, it seemed like Ohio State, anything they wanted to do yesterday, offensively anyways, they were going to do.
Yeah.
Right. If Chip Kelly wanted to go and spread and go four wide, five wide, one running back, quarterback, whatever they wanted to do, they were able to execute. And, you know, that's a credit to, you know, the players, obviously, you know, for going out there and competing, and they just have more talent. They did. And it looked like an NFL team, you know, versus, I know I won't call them, Notre Dame played their asses off, and they had a lot of good players.
There was a lot of talent on that field.
It just looked like it was almost like, you know, big brother versus little brother for the most part, until, you know, you got somewhere into that second quarter and big brother decided to grow up.
It was almost, yeah, I agree. I think that Ohio State just had an answer for anything Notre Dame had. And Notre Dame has, look, Notre Dame's got a lot of NFL players on that roster too. So we're not sitting here crying for Notre Dame. They have plenty of talent. Ohio State just had more. And they're just
especially
as well
at receiver.
Coached.
Especially at receiver.
Receiver and running back. I mean, Notre Dame had two. That's the other thing too. Notre Dame, we said, had to run the ball to win this game. Their running backs combined, if I'm not mistaken, for like 20 yards rushing. Riley Leonard had 40, but even he only averaged 2.8 yards per rush.
Yeah, I think the over and under was 46. I think that we all felt in order for Notre Dame to have a chance, they had to keep it under 46 points. You couldn't get into a shootout with Ohio State, and that's what happened. They got in a shootout with them.
Yeah, and it was a long shootout. I mean, because Ohio State was meticulous with their drives. I mean, it wasn't like they were just throwing bombs. I mean, they were going right down the field. Like I said, if we gave them 10, they'd take 5. If we gave them 20, they'd take 15. And then Judkins, by the way, you know, was a difference maker. That kid's a stud. And to even go to Ohio State, I know that Ryan Day had to talk with the running back room before they even brought him in to make sure it wasn't going to ruffle any feathers. And they took a day to think on it. And they said, bring him in. It's best for the team. And, you know, last week it was, you know, a different running back. But Judkins last night, I think Herb Street at one point in time said he was small, and then they said he's 215 and whatever. Right. And you and I looked at each other like small, like, you know, he's
compact. He's built low. He's built like an NFL
he's
running
fast
back.
And he can catch the ball.
I mean, everybody's looking at Derrick Henry and saying that's the, you know, that's a big runner. Yeah. He's an abnormally big human manimal that plays that position. Typically the best running backs to ever play the game are under 6 foot tall.
Yeah.
And they're right around 5'9 to 5'10, you know, maybe 5'11, right? You get your Marshall Faulks, your Emmett Smiths, you know, guys like that, that are 5'9, 5'10, Barry Sanders, that are going to make guys miss, that are built low to the ground. They can take hits, and, you know, that's kind of what Junkins look like to me.
Yeah, he's good. So congratulations to Ohio State Buckeyes, the 2025 National Football Champions in college football. They're also rated number one going into next season, as well they should be, because what they lose, they're putting right back in the tank.
Texas, they're going to put it right back in the bank account is what it sounds like.
They are going to do that. But that's college football. All these teams, I think out of all the teams in the playoffs, I want to say more than half of them were the highest payrolls. So, like you said, that's where it's going.
It's going to turn to the NBA then.
It's going to be who's got the bigger paycheck. And we're seeing that now with Carson Beck going from Georgia to Miami and getting, you know, what, $8 million or some crazy.
He's getting $4 million to go from Georgia to Miami. And he's making more than probably 7 or 8 quarterbacks that are first round, number one overall picks, you know, with their contracts. Those guys long term are going to make more. This next year is going to make more than about 8 NFL quarterbacks.
Even Duke in football, the quarterback that they just signed in the portal from Tulane, he got a 2-year deal for many years. So that's $8 million to Duke. Duke's throwing out $8 million for football.
That's the going.
Imagine what Ohio State and Notre Dame and LSU and Alabama. It's going to be insane. And this is a whole nother show. And they talked a little bit more about it last night. Something's going to change. There's going to have to be some type of commissioner of college football. And they, you know, there's names being floated out there from guys who are current ADs or Nick Sabans or whoever. But it's still not going to change the amount of money floating through there, because you can't. You cannot stop the amount of money that's flowing through there. You have to just try to not make it the Wild West, which is what it is.
It turns into, you know, the NFL 2.0. You know, you defer money. You know, and I'm going to give you, okay, this is the maximum we can make, $4 million. I'll defer $8 million. You're still going to get 12. Your parents are going to get 4. Your dad's going to get 4. Your mom's going to get 4. There goes your 12. How are they going to keep that from happening?
Well, right? It's not necessarily that they're going to keep it from happening. It's just they're going to have some type of structure, because like I've talked about before, with NIL in particular, every state is different. So you can do things in North Carolina that you cannot do in Pennsylvania, that you cannot do in Alabama, that you can do in California. So every state's different. So they're going to have to come out with something that at least kind of corrals it. Now, I don't know what the hell that is, because when you're dealing with millions and millions of dollars and boosters that, you know, want to win. I mean, listen, at the end of the day, if you're a huge booster of one of these schools and you're worth a gazillion dollars, for you to throw $4 or $5 million, look at Dave Portnoy from Barstool Sports.
It's a tax write-off for them.
Sure. And look what Portnoy, you know, he wanted Michigan to get the best quarterback. He threw into a fund. I think he threw $1 million or $2 to get the quarterback to transfer over and from LSU, and they got him. And look, there's nothing wrong with it. That's the way it is these days. Well, people are going to play, or they're going to get whooped.
You're playing by the rules right now. And unfortunately, it's going to come down to a handful of teams. And I don't know if from a competitive standpoint, if that's going to be what's best for college football. And I think that's going to be ultimately the angle that they have to approach, is that, you know, if you're going to have, you know, the most money, you know, because you have the richest fan base or, you know, the biggest donors, you're going to build your team, and you're going to have the same 4 or 5 teams playing in the national championship every year. And that's not what college football is looking for.
The only argument I'll make to that, isn't that kind of what it's been? Like, Georgia's been in it every year. Alabama's been in it every year. You know, Florida had their run for a long time. Ohio State's in there for, I mean, to me, it's kind of been the same teams.
Well,
I mean,
this year
you had a little taste of Notre Dame. You had a little taste of Texas, Penn State, but it's kind of been the same teams.
Because they cheated better than everybody else.
And
I can tell you, the SEC, you know, in my mind, and I don't have any proof of this, but it just feels like, when the cheating's going on behind closed doors and smoking rooms, you know, if you're the SEC and you're all buddies, we're having our SEC conference and you got my guy that I was supposed to recruit. Hey, good job. You got him. I'm going to get you next time. You cheated better than me to get them. I'm not going to tell on you, right? Because I'm doing the same damn thing. The ACC, the Pac-12, and every other conference is the tattletales. When you beat me, I'm going to go tell everybody else out there that you beat me. And that's the difference with what was happening in the SEC is they cheated better than everybody else.
Yeah, but
and that's still going
to
happen.
I was going to say, all the portal has done is take, you don't have to cheat anymore.
But
you can give it to them freely.
That's right.
And again, I'm not saying it was just SEC.
And that's where, and that's why you're seeing these other teams come in because they're not worried. They had the money. You know, Michigan and Ohio State and Oregon, they have the money. Texas had the money.
Their fair share of cheating.
Of course they did.
Just SEC.
Yeah. Of course they did. But they had to be careful about it because if they didn't, Michigan's going to go tattletale on them, right? Or Northwestern, we don't do that. Why should they, right? It's that type of mentality. And that's where the SEC, to me, felt like, you know, it's the good old boy system. Hey, you got me this time. I'm going to get you next time. We're all cheating. I'm going to do it better than you next time.
Well, the portal definitely has changed that because now you pay them whatever you want to.
That's
and
right.
You go get the guys, the highest bidder. And
that's why you're seeing these other teams starting to kind of creep in. And here's what's going to be interesting. Once they put the lid on it and they try to minimize or to control it, you're going to go back to what? Teams that cheat the best are going to still go out there and find a way to pay their guys under the table more than what you do.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's never going to be a way to fix that. I think the portal may alleviate some of it. But again, I think the playoffs, listen, I enjoy these playoffs, you know, whether it's the same teams before playoffs or before the portal, you know, that are in there now, I think it has given a little different taste to it. But the one thing that I don't like about the playoffs is, give me a damn break. Like last night seemed like college football had been over for 2 months. Mm-hmm. And I'm a Notre Dame fan.
It's,
so you think
it's,
I would have been
for the NFL.
You're going against the NFL and a Monday night for the national championship game after a great weekend of NFL football. Now, don't get me wrong. Thursday of last week, we were jacked up. Dude, we've got great football all weekend long and then Monday night. But by Monday,
you're worn out. I've watched four games this weekend and now I got to watch. I'm tired.
Yeah. And I think they lose some of the sizzle. Yeah. So I don't know what the answer to that is either. But
that.
I do think they've got to figure out how to have the national championship.
Well, how many games they play? 17 games? They played an NFL season.
They pretty much played an NFL season. Yeah.
They played an NFL season.
Which, again, I'm fine with that. But just let it culminate on a night that's not a Monday night. Like, let's do it on. And look, we get in that same argument with the Super Bowl. Why do you have it on a Sunday as opposed to a Saturday? And it all revolves around money, but I have a hard time, and I've been on the business side of sports for a long time. I have a hard time figuring out why Monday is a better financial night than a Saturday, Sunday, minus the fact you go up against the NFL, which I totally understand that. But hell, if you're going to wait that long, why not just wait another week and play this coming Saturday, have the Saturday by yourself, and then you got the NFC championship mm-hmm. and AFC championship the next day. So again, you're dragging it longer, but at least then you're having a Saturday by yourself instead of a Monday night. Coming
if you
off
ask of, college football fans and they want to go from, you know, from the amount of teams they have now to continue to increase that number, you might see that. You might get your wish.
Well,
it's just going to extend the playoffs. The only thing that's going to be able to maybe curtail that is that if you take some of those meaningless non-conference games away early in the season for some of these teams.
Yeah, because they're going to expand it. I mean, I was watching some interviews and reading some stuff this past week, and it sounds like there's a pretty good chance they're going to expand it by at least two in 26 and then probably four after that.
So go from what?
It'll go up to 20 teams total. But then you have to do what you said. Like, for instance, Notre Dame would have loved to have not played Northern Illinois this year.
Yeah,
you know, like,
right.
So you get rid of some of those games, I guess, which stinks for the smaller school because those are good paydays for them. But like you said, you can't have these teams playing 20 games a year.
It's a necessity to keep those programs alive. And what you're going to lose is you're going to lose football at the smaller level because a lot of these colleges won't be able to afford that.
Yeah, and that'll be interesting to see what they do with that. But there's definitely going to be some big changes coming to college football over the next two, not just college football, college sports in general, because the portal and some of these issues they have. But long and short of it is, I enjoyed the hell out of the playoffs. You know, there were some great games. I mean, we got some great heroes now with, and I always screw up his name, but Scadabo at Arizona State. And then, you know, Will Howard, who who, you know, I liked him at Kansas State, but I never thought he was this good of a quarterback in the playoffs, man.
Everybody talks about game managers all the time as being a negative thing. You just watched two of the best ones in college football 100%. Do it last night.
And both of them will get drafted. Both of them will be a backup at least on Sundays.
They're great decision makers. They don't make mistakes, and they're good enough athletes to go out there and win games for your team.
I agree. So we wrapped it up. Ohio State, national champions. We're going to come back after this quick break, talk a little NFL playoffs. We're going to do a little review on the games last weekend, and then we're going to get you ready for the games this weekend. AFC Championship featuring the Bills and the Chiefs and another rematch, which I think is kind of the game we all wanted. At least it was the one I wanted. And then kind of a surprise with the Redskins, the Commanders, going to Philadelphia.
Well, Trump's back in office. You can now say
I guess I can say the Redskins. I'm still confused on what to call all these teams. But anyway, Washington going to Philly. And I think that's going to be a pretty close game, maybe closer than what people think. But we'll get to that in just a second.
It's time to suit up. Here's your host, DJ The Suit Stout.
Welcome back, Suit Up Sports. I'm DJ The Suit Stout, along with Frank Garcia, our producer, Big D, holding it down over there on his new desk. We got him a little new furniture this week to let him kind of condense all the wires and stuff we had laying around. And
he's got a sweet little setup over there.
He does, man. He's holding
it. It's coming together really nicely in here.
It is. We still got some things to add, but for the most part, getting it where we want to. And thank you all for taking the time to listen to us as we continue to grow the show. And we've had great response so far. We actually have some clients coming on here in the next couple of weeks who enjoyed it. So thank you guys for tuning in, and please continue to spread the word and subscribe. Now we're going to get into the NFL playoffs. And this week we had some great games. We had some snow games. We had some upsets.
Playoff football,
man. And it was great. And we're going to start with the Texans and the Chiefs. Texans win that game 23-14. The Chiefs win the game 23-14. But the Texans were in that ball game. And their defense did what we thought they'd do. They got great pressure on the quarterback. You know, Stroud did his thing. Mixon was as strong as he's been. And, you know, you can't take anything away from the Texans. They brought it. A lot of people want to bring in, and I'm starting with this on purpose. You know, the Chiefs have this conspiracy theory that goes through the social media pages and even on ESPN and some of these other channels you see where, you know, supposedly they get this call and that call. And it is getting kind of hard to deny that they might get the benefit of certain calls. I'm not a conspiracy theorist from the standpoint that I think that the refs are purposely trying to steer them in a direction, or they want Mahomes to beat Brady's record or whatever. You know, you can read all different things out there, but the Texans definitely had a couple things not go their way. Otherwise, this game would have been a hell of a lot closer, and we might have seen the Texans moving on as opposed to the Chiefs.
A couple things. You know, when Troy Aikman, who is one of the greatest defenders of any quarterback playing on a Sunday, is calling out the position of flops and saying that can't happen, and he's reacting to what is happening on the game and criticizing the officiating,
yep,
that's an issue, right? Because here you have a Hall of Fame quarterback who's broadcasted for several years now, who's on the number one team, and him and Buck have done, in my opinion, one of the best jobs in sports when they're talking about the football, the quarterback position and the games in general. When he's openly criticizing the officiating, something's a problem. When football turns into football and guys are flopping and it looks like you're on a soccer field, the only thing we're missing is the guys in the stretchers coming out there and spraying ice on Mahomes. That's the only thing that game missed. You can't tell me that, you know, that the refs aren't somewhat involved in protecting, you know, their asset. And I think that they've all been told through the NFL, maybe it's Roger Goodell or with the committee or whoever it might be, that quarterback is our number one priority and protecting him. You need to put all quarterbacks in that same umbrella, or you're going to have things like this happening. Absolutely, 100%, the Chiefs are getting favoritism with their calls because of Mahomes. And we can point to three or four specific incidences in that game where it was a turnover, in essence, when, you know, the calls went against the Ravens. The one to start is the two-hand shove to Mahomes. The guy tackled him.
That went against the Texans.
The Texans.
Yeah.
Well, the two-hand shove against Mahomes,
yep,
where that was third and long, and then it's roughing the passer, first down. That's a turnover. Yep. That's so, you know, when you start looking at
the huge play,
that's the equivalent to the turnover. Another time later in the game, same type of thing. Mahomes is running around. He's lost the affordability of being a quarterback in the pocket, which is what the rule is meant for. Now he becomes a runner, and he's dinking and dodging and runs and then tries to slide late and doesn't even get contacted. How is that not reviewable? That should be a reviewable play. And if you're going to review one thing, that absolutely, with the impact of that play, should be reviewable as well. Just like they do in targeting in college football, was this a egregious play where, you know, this should be roughing the passer? Yeah. Right, absolutely not. And Aikman jumped out of his seat. You could just hear it in his voice.
Yep.
You know, criticizing the officials on that play alone. So when D'Amico Ryans, who I think is a really good coach,
great coach,
and some of the other players are openly criticizing the officials, D'Amico did it a little bit more politically correct.
Well, I think he said we knew that when we come here, we'd be going against everybody, and I mean everybody.
That's right. So yeah, we can. He's saying what he's feeling without necessarily directing
it.
Directly getting fined by the NFL $50,000.
Yeah.
You know, the players, they didn't care. They were going to tell you how, I mean, and that's a problem. The point to this is that becomes a problem because now you don't know how to approach, you know, sacking a quarterback. And, you know, does the NFL have a rooting interest or a bias, you know, for Kansas City and Mahomes to get there because of he's the face of the league. And if he's the face of the league, he has to be there. Yeah. I don't want to take away anything. You know, the sad thing is they don't have to do this. Kansas City doesn't have to do this, but you know, what Mahomes has learned is how to play the cards right and flop. I don't know if you saw the fake flop.
The one out of bounds.
Tries to get one out of bounds.
Yep.
But there's also been times where he's fake going out of bounds and turn it up the field for another 15, 20 yards.
Yep.
Right. So, you know, what do you do if you're a defender in that situation? Do I hit him and risk getting a 15-yard penalty, or do I allow him to do what he's doing and turn up the field and get 15, 20 more yards, which is the equivalent of the same type of play?
Well, I think it's a few things. Number one, you know, when you watch the Ravens Bills game later in that evening, and you see, or later in that weekend, and you see Lamar Jackson get drilled out of bounds and no flag, and then you see the flags that Mahomes are getting, I think that by itself opens it up to criticism. Number two, you know, I don't think anybody has a problem with the NFL trying to protect their quarterbacks,
no.
but I agree with what you said. You got to be able to review it at some case. I mean, I don't, and look, you can make a game last 7 hours long if you review everything, but I still don't understand why you can't review a play like that or a pass interference or get, you know, plays that are game changing. And so if you can review a fumble or an interception, you should be able to also review a 15-yard personal foul or whatever they call, because
roughing the passer.
It's a game changing play. And in that case, it was. And so I do see where, you know, a lot of the fans are getting frustrated with that. And then you add in the old Taylor Swift stuff and how Kansas City's, you know, merchandise sales and all these things have gone up exponentially since Taylor Swift and all this stuff. So I get why Kansas City is an important piece of the puzzle to the NFL. However, you've got to not be so damn blatant with it. And again, I'm not saying it's a conspiracy to make sure they get there, but there's no doubt they're getting the benefit of some calls that other teams are not. And like you said, they don't need it. Kansas City is as good as anybody on the football field, whether they're getting those calls or not. I mean, this might be the best team they've had yet. I mean, their defense is probably the best they've had which will be the 3-year run if they make it this year. So, you know, and also we grew up watching the Panthers play with Cam Newton. They would run a truck over Cam and he wouldn't get a call. Cam would get hit in the head by two dudes at the same time and wouldn't get a call. So I think we also come from a place where we're used to not seeing our quarterbacks get calls. And now to see some of the calls that Mahomes does get, and then you see a guy like Lamar Jackson, who's as dynamic as any quarterback we've seen in the NFL, and they didn't call it on him getting drilled, which if it was Mahomes, people are saying, you know, the fans would have been going crazy. And I do want to just make one other thing. I do think also that I like the fact that it seems like the referees are letting them play more in the playoffs, except for those type of plays. Like, they're not calling some of the touch pass interferences. They seem to let them be playing. Even some, we were watching the game together, calls, yeah. Some of the holding or even some of the fighting where a guy kind of hit the guy and they didn't call anything.
They understand the emotions that are
correct.
Involved,
but if you're going to do that, then you can't call him patting a guy on the foul, ass yeah. as he's running out of bounds.
Well, it's kind of, you know, being a lifelong Phoenix Sun fan.
Yeah.
You know, back in the 90s when, you know, Dan Marley and, you know, Kevin Johnson and Charles Barkley and, you know, the Tom Chambers and, you know, they had their really good basketball team. Or when they were going to play with you know, Nash and, you know, the Stoudemire. Mm-hmm. And they would go play Kobe and the Lakers. We knew as Suns fans, we had to knock out the champion. You couldn't just hang on and beat him. You had to knock him out, which means you had to, you know, dominate there and put yourself in a position where you're going to go out there and just be way better than them.
Yeah.
Because when it came down to it, when you're playing the Bulls, who's getting the touch fouls?
Yeah.
At the end of the game, when you're going up for a layup and you're sitting there as a Suns fan, nobody even touched the guy. And you throw yourself on the floor because you can't do anything. But you know the NBA is going to factor into the perceived touch fouls with Michael Jordan yep. or with Kobe Bryant or with Shaq or with the big star power teams in the big markets.
Yeah.
And that's the problem that the NFL is going to turn into they're going to find themselves in is that people are going to start tuning those things out. If you're going to have the same type of players and the same type of, you know, performances with that happening, people are going to, I can't watch anymore.
Well, I don't remember it's at a fever pitch right now when it comes to Kansas City. I mean, you can't really go on social media during a game, during a Chiefs game, without seeing it. And honestly, you know, right when it's time, like when they called the 15-yard penalty roughing the passer on Anderson for the Texans, mm-hmm. you knew it was going to be the case because it was a bad call. Same thing when they called the roughing the passer when he touched him out of bounds or when they both missed him yeah. and didn't even hit him. And that's
they
when
hit,
Aikman
they
came
hit
out
themselves.
Of his shoes. Yeah. And that's when Aikman came out of his shoes. So, it'll be interesting. I would say this. The Bills are certainly not America's team, and they're certainly tucked away up north in their cold corner. But I can guarantee you there's going to be a lot of Bills fans this weekend because of what we just talked about. People are sick of the calls going the Chiefs' way, the Taylor Swift stuff, the Kelce stuff. And I have no problem with any of them. But at the end of the day, there's going to be a lot of Bills fans that normally wouldn't be. And I think this Bills team is set up to win this ball game. I mean, that we've had some great matchups between these two teams. Maybe the best football game we've ever seen was between these two teams a couple years ago in the playoffs. I think that Josh Allen is playing as good, if not better, than anybody, except maybe Jaden Daniels and Lamar Jackson. I mean, Mahomes is playing great, but the quarterback play right now, and we'll talk about this in a second, is unbelievable. And Josh Allen could very well be the leader of the pack right now. What he's doing out there with his feet, with his arm, with his confidence, his toughness. You know, the weather's not going to bother this Bills team. They're used to it. They've been down this road before. You know, Kansas City's going for their third straight Super Bowl. So not that the Bills needed any motivation anyway, but they certainly are going to have it. And I think that these new Bills fans, I'll even call myself one of those for right now because I'm going to be pulling for them.
Yeah, you know, and what we're going to find out is there's only really one person or one entity that's going to benefit from this. You know who that is? Vegas. Because of what you just said, you know, you're going to start betting with your heart because you're rooting against the Chiefs, and the only people that are going to win on that is Vegas. So
Chiefs minus two as of right now, 47.5 over under.
Yeah. And you know, it's going to be a great game. I know we have some other games to talk about before we get into that game, but when you look at you know, with what that game, you know, brought, I thought that you know, the Texans, you know, it kind of reminded me of the national championship game. You know, Kansas City just had too many players.
Yeah.
And ultimately they had the quarterback that was just a little bit better. I think they would have won that game regardless. That you give the you know, D'Amico Ryans and the Texans all the credit in the world. you know, for fighting and hanging in there. But ultimately, at the end of the day, you know, the Chiefs were just too much.
Yeah, and the Texans are fixed their offensive line and a couple more weapons away from being in that game next year again. I mean, they're legit, and D'Amico can coach. Now we'll move on to the Ravens-Bills game, which that was the game that I think I was most excited about. You knew it was going to be cold, maybe a little snow. The two quarterbacks who were fighting for the MVP award, both teams coming in, just, you know, pretty much hitting on all cylinders. And the game kind of turned into exactly that. And again, you know, there was a stat you brought up before the show about turnovers and how all four of these teams go ahead.
Well, so every team that lost, every team that lost outgained the team that won in yardage,
yep,
and, you know, passing yards, rushing yards, things like that. The difference maker was the teams that won the game had way fewer turnovers.
Yeah.
So, you know, for example, in this game, the Bills, I don't think, had any turnovers. The Ravens had three. And you look at a 27-25, you know, game, the Ravens outgained them. They outrushed them. At the end of the day, it just came down to, you know, who turned the ball over
less. Two fumbles and an interception.
And that was it. I mean, yeah. You know, Lamar Jackson, you know, fumbled the ball, you know, one interception. And then Mark Andrews, gosh, I can't imagine what that guy is going through today. As the next player, you know, you're sitting there and you it's the worst case scenario. It might, you know, cause some, you know, long-term mental damage with this guy. And I know that he's a big reason of why they are, or they were, where they're at. But to have two of the most impactful plays happen and you be responsible for them, you know, where you had an opportunity to make up for one that you go from being, you know, the goat to the hero, you turn into a bigger goat. And, you know, that's unfortunately what happened for Mark Andrews, because the guy is an all pro tight end.
I mean, he's probably one of the best in the Hall of Famer. If not, he's definitely
eventually
on the,
maybe, I don't know if he's there yet, but yeah, eventually he might be that guy. But these types of players are not going to help him.
Well, you know, let me ask you this, because everyone that's played sports have had those moments. With me in soccer, you know, I probably was a 95% penalty.
It's missing a penalty kick with your entire country.
Right.
You know, who's the guy? Messi, you know, a couple of years ago with Argentina, where he missed the penalty kick, and it made him want a quick soccer.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, when you hold yourself to the standards that Andrews hold himself to, and then you make those mistakes, I think it even wears with you even longer, because you're not used to that. You're used to excellence. And, you know, I was going to make the example of, I think I might've missed three penalty kicks my entire career, but two of them were big time penalty kicks. Now, I made plenty of big ones too, but I don't remember them, yep. But I can tell you the two I missed and what I can tell you the everything around the day and everything. And so
it's equivalent to, you know, missing a free throw to tie the game or to win the game, and then losing the game because you missed a free throw. It's the equivalent to, you know, walking, if you're the pitcher, walking the final run in.
Yeah.
It's the equivalent to striking out with bases loaded and two outs, and all you need is a hit to win. It's, you know, the pressure that you're going to put on yourself, that's going to be lasting for a
especially
long time.
Especially coming after the fumble he had and then to drop the pass. I mean, look, was the pass perfect? No. Does Mark Andrews catch that 9 out of 10? Yes.
He catches that 9.5 out of 10.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that was me and you playing pitch and catch out in the backyard.
Yep.
Ball hit him right in the hands. He bobbled it. You know, maybe it was wet. Maybe it was slippery. Maybe because of the snow. You know, he went down, and when he went down, his knee kicked the ball again, and he lost control of it.
Yep.
I think the announcers were shocked. Everybody in the world was shocked, because you know, from the angle that they showed on television, it looked like he just caught and fell into the end zone, and then all of a sudden we see the ball on the ground.
Yeah.
How the hell did he drop that? Oh my God! Because it was such an easy pass.
Yeah.
It could have been a little bit higher. It could have been a little bit more in front. But for that,
well, quality, he even said he makes that catch. I mean, he took. Yeah, I thought he handled it well after the game, and I thought Lamar handled it well. You know, Lamar
was pissed when it happened.
Well, I bet he was. Yeah, of course. I mean, when you're in the middle of the game, and that's a crucial part of the game to tie the ball game, then hell yeah, you're gonna be pissed off. But I think they both handled it fine. That's just being veterans. But Ravens take it on the chin, and Bills move on. And like I said, it sets up the game that I'm looking forward to the most this weekend. The Washington Commanders, slash Redskins, whatever you want. We're in the South down here, so a lot of people, you're up in Charlotte, Redskins are on TV every weekend. So,
well, first we got to talk about them dismantling Detroit.
Well, no, that's where I was. Where I was getting to. You know, I would have bet, and I think I did bet a lot of money that Detroit was just going to be able to outscore them.
Well, I think they were the biggest favorites going into the weekend.
Yeah,
nine and a half, in some places 9 points in others.
Yep.
And you know, go out there and get the doors blown off by 14. And Jaden Daniels looked like he looked like a young Patrick Mahomes. I mean, the kid never gets rattled. He makes great decisions, and the more pressure and duress he's under, the slower things move for him.
Yeah.
And that's the sign of a great quarterback, a great athlete. The game is moving slower than what he's playing. As a great point guard, you know, you fill in the blank with whatever it is. He's seeing the entire field, right, and knowing exactly where to go with the ball, and you know, making great throws.
Everything with him is just smooth. I mean, everything.
There was a time, DJ, towards the end of the game in that Detroit game when you thought Detroit might be making a little bit of a pushback, and Daniels goes down there and puts the nail in the coffin, and Detroit defensive lineman comes barreling in untouched, and Daniels just sits there poised with confidence and throws a absolute strike to a crosser. That he just needed to wait a half a second longer to open up. And he waited perfect amount of time, put the ball out there with timing and touch into a place where the guy could run in stride and, you know, get a first down. And it's just those things, you know, the reason why teams blitz is to speed up the quarterback. When you blitz Jaden Daniels, the game slows
You're
down.
You're doing him a favor. Yeah. And Dylan, what's the name of the goggles, the VR or whatever they're called, the you see the kids wearing the goggles all the time and VR. So there was a story about Jaden Daniels, and as part of his contract with the Redskins, he insisted on this VR technology be included in his package. And Cliff Kingsbury was talking about it, where he basically puts these VR goggles on and they speed the game up. So he's seeing all these plays coming at him like a video game, but it's speeding the play up, and it's gotten him so good at being comfortable when things are sped up, and they're giving a lot of credit to this VR goggle.
What does he do? Is it like a video game?
It's like a video game, but he does it during practice or during film study, where he basically puts these goggles on and they can set up a play in it and speed it up. So
it would be during like his off season, you know, it'd be part of his work.
A Tuesday of you know, whenever he does,
it'd be part of his training that he would use to,
but I think they even do it during the week. So if you're going up against certain defenses, they load it into this VR, you know, again, we're too old to know what the hell those things are, but I thought it was pretty fascinating that,
well, when is that going to go out and get patented? Because every quarterback in America should be using it.
That was my point. If they're not, you got to believe that there's not going to be a contract in college or the NFL that's not going to have it, because like you said, he's never pressured. I mean, he seems like he's calm, cool, collective at all times. And
that's one of the biggest things that you really can't measure, you know, when you go into the combines. You can measure the height, you can measure this, you know, the speed, you can measure the strength, the arm strength, you know, the 40-yard dash, but how do you measure the poise? How do you measure? You have to watch the film, right? And there's really no indicator. You know, here's a good way that you can probably even start measuring it at some point if it's built into a video game, where you can look at the results of, you know, your accuracy when you blitz, your accuracy of, you know, when the game is sped up, when you're in man coverage, you know, what happens when you're in zone, you know, how do you throw to the window, you know, when they zone blitz you, and you have to make a quick decision. If you fumble the ball and you drop it, you know, decisions that you make. And that's what it seems. And that's why he's playing a step ahead of everybody, DJ, because it looks like, you know, the game has slowed down to the point where it's almost standing still for him.
Yep. Yeah. And you know, the technology piece of it in baseball, we both coach baseball, and you have guys that can't hit a curveball. Well, you can just load a curveball to the machine and it can throw you 100 curveballs in a row, but it's still different when you see it coming out of a certain delivery, a certain hand, a certain speed. Well, with this,
or you need to get Joe Boo over there to get the, you know, the chicken and the,
yeah, from Major League.
Yeah. But I need Joe Boo to hit the curveball.
Yes, exactly. So it was pretty interesting story about how he, you know, the credit he gives to this VR technology, but, he really never looks rattled. And we've seen quarterbacks, we can even use Bryce Young here in Charlotte, where crappy offensive line his first year. He's running for his life. He's getting hit all the time, and then he loses confidence. Now he's not setting his feet in the pocket. You know, and we go down that whole road to where he has to overcome all of that to have a great finish to the season. Well, you got to think this technology now.
Is he using the
no, I don't know if he is, but I'm saying that after reading the story about Jane Daniels, I would think every quarterback is going to use it. And some quarterbacks still may not be able to process it correctly. You know, it's like the test they make you guys take at the combine.
Wonderlic test.
The Wonderlic test. Some guys score great on it and still struggle. And some guys like Lamar Jackson score awful on it and turns out to be, you know, two-time MVP and damn near maybe three times.
Yeah, Wonderlic test doesn't really have much to do with your football savvy.
Right.
It's more about having seen it, your athleticism, and it is a God-given talent. You know, I mean, why is Chris Paul able to slow the game down, you know, in the NBA? I never really thought he was a great point guard, but Steve Nash, Chris Paul, they see the court better than anybody else. They know exactly where their players are going to be. They know exactly when to throw the pass. They know whether to alley-oop it or to bounce pass it. And the game, the vision and they have is it's a God-given talent. And, you know, for somebody that's played sports all of your life, and I know you have as well, you know, it's that's what soccer is so great for, is that you can see the game develop.
Yeah.
As an offensive lineman, it helps me because if I feel or see a stunt taking place, I can react a half a step sooner than everybody else. So it's not just for quarterbacks.
Sure.
This would be something for everybody.
Yep.
Right. That you could use. If I'm an offensive lineman and I see this stunt where the TE's coming around and I can see that happening, you know, and anticipate that, you know, then that gives me a step up.
Yep.
So,
which in sports in general, getting that extra step is crucial in any sport. And so, you know, listen, Jaden Daniels has just been unbelievable all year long. And you know, the Detroit game, Washington freaking took it to him with their own game. Mm-hmm. I mean, listen, Dan Quinn's more aggressive than Dan Campbell. Who would have thought that? I mean, Dan Quinn goes on every fourth down.
When you have a guy that's 86% completion,
87%
completion.
Yep.
Probably more like 88 or 89 this weekend.
Yeah.
On fourth down.
Yep.
Throw out the analytics. You have your own analytics.
Yeah.
And his name is Jaden Daniels.
Yeah. And let me tell you something. Going to Philadelphia, who
fourth, you know, and five.
And he was going for it on times when you and I, who tend to be aggressive,
gotta kick it.
We're going, gotta kick this. Nah, he's going for it.
Yep.
and
game on the line.
But the team believes in him, and we talked about this with their first game against Tampa. That's what they've done all year. So it's not a secret. It's not a surprise. They're not going up there on fourth down going, oh, maybe we'll get it. They're not going, we're going to get it.
By the way, have you seen Dan Quinn?
I saw Dan Quinn
in college.
The picture I showed you. Yeah, when he was a freaking.
He was a defensive lineman, offensive lineman.
I don't know, but he was a big dude. He also had the hammer throw record at Salisbury College for 20 years.
At where?
At Salisbury College, wherever the hell that is.
It's in North Carolina.
No, that's Salisbury, North Carolina. I think this is a college that's like Midwest, but I'm not sure. Okay. But yeah, he was a big dude.
Yeah.
And now he looks like me.
He looked like a WWE wrestler with a bald head.
He did.
And tats and, you know, getting out there and getting after it. But, you know, that aggressiveness hasn't gone away from him. And, you know, when he was the D coordinator up in Seattle, you know, they had, you know, one of the best defenses in the NFL, and the aggressiveness that he approached the game at then transferred over. He didn't really maybe necessarily keep that aggressiveness in Atlanta. You know, one of the biggest comeback from behind upsets in history of the Super Bowl, with Tom Brady coming back, you know, winning that game. But he had Matt Ryan as a quarterback. You know, he's back. So this guy has a knack.
Well, and he learned. He takes notes from every step of the way, and he learns where he needs to change and where he doesn't. And he's admitted that. You know,
But he's been good at wherever he's been.
He's been good. And listen,
he may have not won one. I mean, Seattle they won, but he's a D coordinator there. But you know, under Pete Carroll. But he, you know, when he was in Atlanta, he had his own show, and they had a chance. They were there quite a bit.
They were whooping New England's butt until the second half. So, listen, you know, Detroit will be interesting to see what happens to them. You know, their offensive coordinator, Ben Johnson, just signed to be the head coach of the Bears. It sounds like Aaron Glenn, their defensive coordinator, is going to be the head coach of the Jets, if not the Jets, the Saints. But it sounds like the Jets are going to sign him today.
Well, that's a homeschool. He played for the Jets.
Yeah. And so if you're Dan Campbell, you're going to lose both your coordinators. You always wonder with teams like that who have been around, like Detroit, when that window closes. They've got a lot of good young talent. So I'm not saying the window
closes. That's a sign of a good coach, though, DJ. I mean, when you're losing coordinators.
Well, we'll see. He hasn't lost him yet. I mean, now he's gonna have to replace him, and we'll see who replaces him.
You know, it's still gonna be his way and his philosophy, and he's gonna find guys that are gonna fit that. And you know, the Detroit Lions, gosh, if you're a Detroit Lion fan right now, I mean,
the best record you've had, the first number one seed you've ever had.
In the entire NFL.
And then here comes the Redskins, which you had to be elated to play because
they're a rookie quarterback.
And they come in and just give it to you. And I tell you, the Rams-Philly game was similar to that from the standpoint of Rams coming across the country. Everybody knows McVay can coach, and they've got a veteran team. Stafford struggled in cold weather, which he ended up doing in the second half once the snow really started coming down. But
both teams struggled.
Both teams.
When that type of weather takes place.
But when you've got Saquon on the other team, man, he's just a difference maker.
Well, and that's you know, kind of going back to what we said, you know, going into these playoffs. You know, the teams with the running quarterbacks, and there's four of them left.
Yeah.
All of them have running quarterbacks that can keep the play alive. You know, starting with, with the Eagles, Jalen Hurts, gosh, yeah. with Jalen Hurts, you know, starting with him, you know, when he scores the first touchdown, breaking the tackle,
taking
a 45 yard run, defense was in great position, makes one guy miss, and it's, you know, 88 and out the gate. So, you know, that's what started it. And then, you know, now what do you do if you're a defense? You focus on him, or do you take away Barkley?
Yeah.
Or do you take away, you know, or Hurts or the receivers with, you know, what they can do down the field. So they have an offense built for championships. Their offensive line, I don't know if you've seen the right guard.
Their offensive line is the best offensive line of football. And listen, you know, the Redskins beat Philly when they played the second time late in the season this year. I think it was an overtime game. And I want to say the Redskins scored like five drives in a row to even get to that point. But nonetheless,
these teams are well aware of each other.
Well aware, same division. And, the, you know, it's going to be cold as hell. But as of today, the weather looks like it's going to be 39 degrees at game time. Yeah,
both teams are outdoor teams. So that's not going to factor into it. The only thing that would factor into it, if it was really windy, you would favor the running team because it can be harder to throw the ball. But, you know, what it's going to come down to is that if Philadelphia can play zone defense, keep Jaden Daniels from escaping and making big plays, maybe even spy him, you know, kind of like, you know, what you would do if you had, you know, Michael Vick or, you know, a running mobile quarterback that could make things happen, a Lamar Jackson type of player. But getting pressure with your defense, pushing the pocket, and the difference is going to be, for me, is that Jaden Daniels can deliver from the pocket just as much as he can when he escapes it.
Well, and that's what's going to be interesting, too, because Philadelphia has some injuries in their secondary, including their rookie DB, who's been unbelievable this year, and he hurt a shoulder last game. And
he'll be back.
I hope he is, because if
hurt shoulder?
Yeah, but it was pretty banged up. I don't know if they've even released what it was yet.
He may not be able to tackle as hard, but he can still cover.
He missed the rest of the Ram game, but if he does miss the game, yeah. McLaurin has been on a tear, and not having him to guard
Tordall him. Tordall is a wonderful drug.
Yeah, and again, I'm sure he will find a way to get in there, but if not, that'll hurt. But Washington's defense has been looking better and better every week. Like, it's almost like Dan Quinn's found a groove now. I mean, they're bend don't break in a lot of cases, but man, they're getting after the ball. I mean, as a Panther fan this past week, you watch Luvu and Chin making play after play after play, and you go, man, you know, what are the two things the Panthers missed on defense this year? Rushing the passer and a safety.
Jeremy Chin was a guy that, as a Panther fan, I was disappointed they left because I thought he had Pro Bowl potential. Frankie Luvu, I mean, I can understand why they let him go for the amount of money he was going to get.
They tried to keep him. They just got in late at the game.
They couldn't afford his contract either. So they had to kind of let him walk. And, you know, I mean, when he goes, just because you go to another team and has success there doesn't mean that you lost out, because he might not be that same type of player.
Well, he was,
without those players around
him. He was unbelievable for the Panthers, and to let him go, definitely hurt. But it kind of, as a guy who doesn't care, you know, I'm a Giants Panther fan, so I hate the Commanders/Redskins, but it made it kind of fun watching two of our guys get out there and kick ass, and they did. I mean, Luvu was all over the field, Chin, a huge interception, you know, and he was kind of a man without a position in our defense last year with the Panthers, so it made it kind of fun knowing a couple guys on that defense and just seeing them get after it, along with Bobby Wagner, who's been playing, I think, for 37 years, it seems like, including on those Super Bowl and great defensive teams that Dan Quinn had in Seattle. But this game's going to be a fun game.
has the best offensive line left. They've got a great defense, great defensive line. That's another thing. Washington's missing, I think, their left guard. Mm-hmm. And now Jalen Carter is going to be going up against a backup who I think is Trent Scott, who used to play for the Panthers and didn't do a very good job of it. So that could be a huge matchup. Jalen Carter, who's probably the best D tackle in the league right now, going up against a backup offensive lineman. You know, I'm sure Jaden Daniels is not happy about that. But at the end of the day, Philadelphia 6.5-point favorite going into that game. Let's just start right there. Let's start with the Philly-Washington game. Mm-hmm. You know, we talked about Jaden Daniels. We talked about the running game. Saquon is just in another world right now, though. I mean, 4 rushing touchdowns against the Rams this year. All 4, I believe, were over 60 yards. Like, mm-hmm. It's unheard of.
Well, that's what happens when you have to play 11-on-11 football. And, you know, Jalen Hurts, you know, being able to run the football equally as well as any running back in the league at that quarterback position. We saw it last night in college football.
Yeah.
In that first drive with Notre Dame. We've seen it throughout the year, you know, with whether it's Lamar Jackson or you know, Josh Daniel, you know, who you fill in the blank with these running quarterbacks, you know, being able to have impact playing 11-on-11 football puts so much pressure on the defense where it makes guys have to tackle in space. You know, if you're going to tackle me and you have a small window because the defensive line is doing their job, because this is where we're, you know, kind of scheduled to go with the fullback and with the guy coming behind, I have to make a tackle within a box. Mm-hmm. Now, when I open that up because I have a quarterback going this way that can equally run the ball, and I have a guy going this way and I have a receiver coming this way, it spreads and thins the defense out, opens it up. So these windows for you to tackle me are now twice the size, if not 3 times the size. Yep. When you have a guy as talented and as strong as Saquon, he can run through those arm tackles.
Yep.
You're not going to tackle him one-on-one very often in space. And, you know, if he gets in that second level, he has that third gear, he has that fifth gear to get away from people. And that's what makes him so explosive. And that's what makes this offense so dangerous, is that, you know, in playoff football, regardless of the weather, you're always going to be able to run the football. And, you know, that's where I said before the playoffs, going into these playoffs, the team that run the ball and stop the run are going to win. The Philadelphia Eagles do that better than anybody else, right? And now you can throw in the Chiefs with their defense and the Bills with the way they're playing right now.
Yep.
They run the ball, they stop the run. And the reason why the Commanders are in there is because they've been playing good defense, but they have a quarterback that can run the ball.
You think that in 8-10 years from now, there'll be your old school typical you know, pocket quarterback anymore? Like, don't you think that this?
There's no such thing as that anymore.
Yeah, they'll all run. There'll be no more.
So what's happening? And it's a trickle down effect all the way to grade school, middle school, Pop Warner. Is you're finding the best athlete and you're teaching them how to throw the ball.
Yeah,
right. He's a running back first. You're finding the best guy, best athlete, and saying, you know, let's teach you how to throw the ball and read a defense, and you can play that position and make a lot of money.
Yeah.
So it used to be where if you couldn't throw the ball, right, you couldn't play that position. And that's still the case. You still have to be able to throw the ball from the pocket, right? But you can't just throw the ball.
Right.
You have to be able to run. And that was, when you look at the Lions, they didn't have a quarterback that could escape.
Same with Rams.
You look at the
Stafford,
Rams.
If they got him they didn't have
a quarterback that can escape.
Yep.
You have to have a guy that keeps plays alive and threatens you with their legs to make big plays and make quick decisions when you're playing man coverage and you have trips to one side and they all run crossing routes. That side's going to be wide open for you to take, and you have to make that decision now.
Yeah.
Right. And that's what these quarterbacks nowadays are doing. So to answer your question about in 5-10 years, it's already happening.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to have success, it's already happening. That quarterback, even for the two guys that we saw in the national championship, you know, Howard and Leonard, they might not be the most explosive runners, but they're good athletes.
Yeah.
Who's the draft choices last year? We're looking at one of them, right? He's just as much of an impact running the football. You know, even though he's slight, he doesn't take big hits, but he opens the defense up so that windows are there so that if they run the play action, you get the linebackers to bite up and you throw behind them.
Yeah.
Or if the linebacker is going to play deep, you just keep the ball and slide and get 8-10 yards and you stay on course and move on to the next play.
Yeah. I mean, Matt Stafford and Jared Goff are two great quarterbacks who had great years, but you're right. I mean, they both, when they had to escape the pocket, and Goff did a little better than Stafford did, but it was over where these other quarterbacks are gone. And so,
20 yards, 30 yards. Those are big plays. Those are momentum changing plays
and pressure on the defense.
Anything over 20 yards as a rush or 15 yards as a rush and 20 yards as a pass is considered a big play.
Yep.
And those are factors into formulas for winning, right? Yep. Turnovers is the number one, running the ball 30 plus times is another one, impact plays and field position. Those are the big things you look at when you're talking about impact on a game. And if you don't have that at quarterback, you're playing uphill.
Yeah, I agree. It's fun. And, you know, along with these quarterbacks that can run is like a new wave of this aggressive football too, where you've got these coaches that are going for it on fourth down, which never happened. I mean, we would go through games without seeing a fourth down. And the only times it was a fourth down where they go for it were maybe where it's end of the game, they had to get it before the game was over, or a big fourth and one. And now they're going for it. It seems like half the damn time in their own territory, in their own red. I mean, it's fun to watch, but it's because of these quarterbacks. Can use their feet and their arms. Let's get to picks now, because I think we've done a pretty good job of breaking down these players. And I know we're both excited about this weekend's game.
I am.
Yeah, I am too. Both Sunday afternoon evening, 3:00 and 6:30. And let's start with the first game, the Redskins and the Eagles. Who you like? -6.5,
47.5 was the over and under. You know, gosh, I mean, you look at this game, you know, DJ, and we talked about both of these teams and, you know, the playmakers they have that have the most impact of any position in all sports. The guy that touches every single time on offense is the quarterback. Jaden Daniels is playing as well as anybody. And it's hard to bet against him, but he just doesn't have the experience,
mm-hmm.
right? And you wonder if the consistency week after week after week is eventually going to catch up. And it's not going to be because of, you know, things moving too fast for him. It's going to be because guys are making plays. And this is where the rest of the team, because I think these guys kind of neutralize each other. You look at what the Eagles are able to do running the ball. And, you know, Jalen Hurts as an impact player, he's maybe not the thrower that Daniels is. He's absolutely not the thrower Daniels is. But you look at their defenses and their offenses, and that's where it comes down to. You can win the game multiple ways if you're the Philadelphia Eagles. You can win it on defense by getting the turnover, by sacking the quarterback, by putting pressure on the quarterback, and or making big plays on the defensive side. And on offense, you can win the game just handing the ball off. You don't need necessarily the quarterback to throw the ball all over the place. And I think that's going to be the difference. There's just too many playmakers on this team, and I like the Eagles -6. Gosh, that's the number.
Yeah.
I would still take the Eagles in the 6 points, because I do feel like, according to some of the experts out there, you win the game on a single digit, you know, spread. You're usually going to cover the spread anyways. So I'm taking the Eagles -6.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think a few things to look at here. Number one, the Rams against arguably the best offensive line in the league with Philadelphia. The Rams got to Hurts a lot. I think they had 6 sacks or something.
And number 9 for the Rams has turned into a manimal.
Oh, a curse.
Yeah. The guy is relentless out there on the football field. He came from the opposite side when Hurts, he got knocked down, stood up and tried to chase, Saquon down.
Yep.
And got his hands on him as he was getting in the end zone. I mean, that's just incredible effort.
Yeah, the Rams' defensive line had been on a great streak of getting to the quarterback through the playoffs. I don't think the Redskins, the Commanders, are going to have that.
They don't have that guy that gets after it like that.
Not like that. And
Frankie Louvu is going to be neutralized very quickly.
And they've got a good D-line, but I think Quinn will come up with a game plan to try to get him back there, but I don't think they'll have the pressure the Rams did. So I think Hurts is going to have more time to throw the ball, and if they choose to, which I think they will. You know, in the Rams Philly game, there was a point in time where I kept going, why the hell are the Eagles not running Barkley more? It seemed like they were never running him. And I looked at the stats and he had 16 rushes, but it didn't seem like it, you know? And so I think the
Michael Jordan quiet 40, how do you get 40 points? He's like, next thing you look up and he's got 40 points. Yeah. You're like, it doesn't look like
he had 16 rushes for 100 yards. And, you know, but I don't think that Washington gets the pressure on Hurts that the Rams did. So I think Philly will have an easier time scoring this game. I do think the Redskins will score. I do think the Commanders will score. I think Jaden Daniels is going to, you know, he's going to get his, but I do think you're looking at, you know, 30 to 20 kind of game, something like that. So I agree with you. I think the Eagles.
The confidence is there for the Commanders.
Well, they don't have nothing to lose.
We don't know what we don't know type of mentality.
Yep.
They got a couple of games under their belt, and the fact that they beat them in the last, you know, meeting, it gives them a little confidence.
They've been on the road. I mean, they won at Tampa, which, you know, that's not known for a crazy place to win, but nonetheless, your first playoff game as rookie quarterback. Then you win in Detroit, their first game as a number one seed, loud as hell, all the noise coming into that game about how good Detroit is and yada yada, and they beat them there. So they're definitely not going to be
intimidated. Dan Quinn is a guy that loves, and I did. I mean, there's certain type of teams and certain type of players that love to circle the wagons.
Yep.
And it's us against the world mentality. Dan Quinn seemed to be one of those guys.
He is, and he's got a veteran defense that loves that. Like I said, you look at that defense, and it's a lot of
Bobby
veteran
Wagner guy. Gets exposed in this game.
He could. I mean, he's played really well, but this Eagles offense is unbelievable. I mean,
Bobby Wagner, when he was with the Seahawks, was arguably one of the top five linebackers in the game. Unfortunately, yep. Father Time is catching up. This will be his 18th, 19th game, something like that, in the season. And this is a different animal with Saquon Barkley running the ball and Jalen Hurts.
Yeah.
Who do you stop if you're Wagner? He's going to be kind of sitting in the middle, and it doesn't bode well for an older defensive player that's going to be kind of sitting there later in his career.
Yeah, I agree. I think Eagles get that one. This Chiefs-Bills game is the one we're excited about. Not that we're not about the Eagles Commanders game, but this game is just another rematch of, again, maybe the best game we've ever seen.
What year is that? 2001?
2 years ago, right?
2 or 3 years ago when the overtime, the
Bills came down and scored. You thought they had it, and then Mahomes does his thing.
Travis Kelce and Mahomes just have this bond that you can't really teach. It's and Andy Reid allows the creativity and the freedom to be able to make the improvised plays.
Yeah.
And, it just seems like, they find a way to get it done. I just don't think it's going to be potentially enough in this game.
Yeah. I think the Bills are hitting on all cylinders. I think that they arguably may have beat the best team in the Ravens this past weekend.
I thought the Ravens were playing the best of anybody, to be honest.
And it took some help and some, like we said, some turnovers, but the Bills are playing great. Josh Allen's playing great. And it just seems like in any sport, when you look at, you know, whether it was the Bulls getting past the Pistons, or at some point in time, a team's got to get past their nemesis. And it seems like when you've got arguably an MVP player like a Josh Allen, like the Bills do, they've got a good defense, two damn good running backs. Good. I mean, they're loaded all over the board. I just think this is their year. I think they're going to go in. The Chiefs have gotten by. I mean, even in regular season, they've gotten by. You know, they barely beat a team like the Panthers. They in the playoffs, you know, whether it took help from the refs or not this past game against the Texans, they've done enough to get by. Maybe they're due to just unload an ass whooping on somebody. I don't think the Bills are that team that are going to get unloaded on. But I like the Bills in this game. I think the Bills will come in. I think they're going to hit them right in the mouth right away. I think you're going to see a lot of Josh Allen right away, and then we'll see what happens. But I like the Bills.
Pressure breaks pipes. You know, pressure makes people do things that you speed your body up, and you know, you do things that you're not normally used to doing. Josh Allen has experienced that pressure. Him and Mahomes are good buddies. I know the game is going to be at Kansas City. And I think the thing that's going to be real is the Patrick Mahomes effect.
Yeah.
And I do feel like the criticism is getting so loud that the referees are going to lose a little bit of the protection for him when he becomes a runner out in space. And I feel like the Bills will be able to take advantage of that a little bit. In the pocket, he's still going to be protected and afforded those plays, just like Tom Brady was. And we kept waiting for somebody to stop calling him on Tom, and it didn't happen.
Yeah.
You got to go beat the champ, right? And the Bills, as a, you know, 2-point dog in this game, to me says that they're the better team on a neutral site. and Vegas is, you know, on to something. Josh Allen is playing great. Arguably could be the MVP. Their running game is at all as an all-time high. And their confidence, you know, with McDermott and a aggressive caller is there as well.
Yeah, Joe Brady's done a great job with that.
And offense. It's going to come down to, again, the thing that the theme for the week, turnovers. Who turns the ball over fewer is going to win this game. That's as simple as that.
Yeah.
And that's the thing we can't predict, right? Tip pass, you know, that's the way the cookie, my dad used to say, that's the way the cookie crumbles sometimes, son.
Yeah.
You know, that's just the way the cookie, however the cookie crumbles is going to be the determining factor in this game. Cause I do think that both teams have to play flawless in order to beat the other one.
Yeah. The one thing that I'll keep an eye on in this game is we talked about stopping the run and running the ball. And the Chiefs running game to me is, you know, Pacheco, ever since he broke his leg, hasn't been the same. I think he only ran the ball 4 or 5 times last game. Hunt has been good, but again, in short bursts.
It's not the same guy.
Yeah, I feel like the running game that the Chiefs have right now is not as powerful as it usually is. Mm-hmm. I do think their defense is better than it has been, but I think that when you're Buffalo and you're looking at Cook, who's just been a world beater this year, mm-hmm. and then they've got a couple other kids.
Well, you got Allen as a 250 pound. I mean,
exactly.
Allen, I'm just going to probably piss a lot of people. Allen is the white Cam Newton. Josh Allen is the same player.
Very similar size wise.
Except he's a better passer. He's a better passer. That's it. They're the same size. They run the same type of plays. They have the same impact on a game. Josh Allen is a white version of Cam Newton that throws the ball in the pocket better.
Yeah, I mean, he is. He's tough, and he's having a hell of a year. They've got a great running game. You know, even the guy like Curtis Samuel is starting to, you know, pick his game up now that he had a huge catch last week. Shakir is just unbelievable. I mean, yards after catch of that guy's, you know, is top five in the league. So
here's going to be the interesting factor into this game. Andy Reid, you know, because for some reason, it just seems when it's all on the line, he comes up with a creative play or two that is going to change the momentum and the outcome of a game. Whether it's, you know, as we saw the double shovel, the toss shovel pass in, you know, I think it was the Lions game last week.
Yeah.
There's something creative because Andy Reid is going to put it in there with Worthy, who's one of the fastest player in the NFL. You know, with Allen with Mahomes, you know, or you fill in the blank, maybe Kelsey, you know, where Kelsey throws a pass, you know, a former quarterback.
Yeah. Yeah,
there's going to be something within this game, you know, where it's going to be an Andy Reid, you know, type of decision play that could change the impact of the game. And, you know, that's why he's, you know, arguably one of the greatest coaches, if not the greatest of all time.
He's definitely,
he's in the conversation.
No doubt. So we both got the Bills and the Eagles Super Bowl. And, that would, I think
the Bills too.
I like the Bills. I think the Bills,
what's the score of the game? You'd like the over or the under?
You know what? And that, I think I like the over in both games. I think Philly, I could see a 30-20 game. Bills Chiefs, I think maybe even a little more, maybe, you know, 31-27, something like that.
If you remember,
it's gotta be a close game, right? Like the Chiefs and Bills aren't going to play.
If you remember the game that took place, the one we're talking about, the fireworks didn't happen until
the fourth quarter. Game. Yeah.
So if you remember, that was a tight scoring game. It was like 17-14 and then boom.
Yeah.
It just went score, score, score. And because of the Chiefs getting the ball last in overtime, they went right down and scored the touchdown.
Well, I think Joe Brady, though, who we know him from a short stint here with the Panthers, but he's done a hell of a job as the offensive coordinator for the Bills. And what you said about Andy Reid, I almost think the same. I have a feeling the Bills are going to come out and want to punch the Chiefs right in the mouth right away. Like, I think they're not going to waste any time. There's not going to be any feeling each other out. It's like a boxing match when you're on the third fight of, you know, Tyson and whoever, that they know each other. They know what's going to happen. They know what you're going to do. There's not going to be many surprises here. But the ones that the coaches do come up with, and Andy Reid and Joe Brady, I think, are two that will come up with something, could be, you know, a huge factor in the game. And then again, it'll be interesting to follow the officiating because, you know, any.
I hope it's not. I hope this is not.
I hope they keep their flags in their pocket. Because, like I said, the other games, for the most part, the refs have stayed out of the way. I mean, they even in the national championship last night, I mean, the refs have kind of stayed out of the way, let the players do their deal, decided on the field. And so I hope that that's what happens in both these games this weekend. But if we do come out with a Bills-Eagles Super Bowl, that's going to be a hell of a matchup. And it, even if it's the Chiefs and Washington.
Well, I think whatever team comes out of the AFC is going to be the favorite. And then I think the Eagles, you know, I think the three teams that could have played for and been easily the Super Bowl matchup would have been the Ravens, the Bills, and the Chiefs and whoever. Right.
Yeah.
I think the Eagles have been the fourth best team all year long.
Well, I know this. I know that Monday when we do our next podcast, we're going to have a lot to talk about and we'll be honing in on the Super Bowl, which is bittersweet because it means that football is almost over. But, you know, football is going to be a lot different these days because with the portal, you're not going to go many weeks without having conversations about, did you see who just transferred here? I just saw today, I think a great running back from Utah State just transferred to South Carolina. And so, you know, the
from
football
Utah State
from Utah State. And so, you know, you're the news.
How
cycle,
many times can you transfer?
You can pretty much transfer as long as you have eligibility.
So if I'm a sophomore, I want to transfer to Utah State. I mean,
Riley Leonard played at Northwestern, Duke, and then Notre Dame. As long as you have eligibility,
he kept making more and more money, didn't he?
Well, when he's at Northwestern, it was before the money really started. Yeah. I don't know what he made at Duke, but the money now is just going to be even crazier. And again, not even in football, but even in college basketball. So as long as you have eligibility, you can pretty much move. Again, that's where they're going to have to kind of make some rules. You know, is it a 2-year deal? I mean, and who knows what that'll look like. But thank you guys for joining us today. Hopefully we dove into your national championship game good enough. Got you ready for the playoffs this weekend in the NFL. And then next week will be all about the Super Bowl. And we'll probably mix a little hoops in next week. We haven't had much time to talk basketball, but the ACC is heating up. You know, the Hornets have 3 wins in a row, so I do want to give them credit. I kind of want them
congrats
to stay in that Cooper flag first pick
they're
deal.
They're just winning themselves out of the first pick.
But they're at least fun to watch these last three games.
They're terrible.
But we'll be back next week on Monday or Tuesday with Suit Up Sports. I'm DJ Stout, Frank Garcia. Thanks to Big D over there holding down the producer table.